Today I want to talk about good things. What's good in the world? What's getting better? Because it's very rarely talked about, and you're just going through a global health week where a lot of what you're going to be getting is about bad news and terrible news. For those of you who are studying medicine, it's hard to think of a better time to have been studying medicine, in that you are less likely than any of your predecessors ever born before to have to deal with case after case of infants and children dying, at least in this country and in Europe, of people dying of things which are easily preventable. And even worldwide, about 2 or 3 years ago, infant mortality fell at its fastest ever recorded rate. It fell from 42 babies per 1,000 dying in the first year of life to 40 in just 1 year. It's a 5% fall in infant mortality globally in a single year. And almost nobody celebrated it. It's quite remarkable how little attention is given to good news. I think it's possibly the kind of best news story ever, is that kind of news. And how much attention is given to bad news. And we tend to skew these things that way. It's partly about how things are framed. So if you're constantly told about things being bad, you can come to accept that things are bad, and then you might even believe it's inevitable that they're bad. What do you expect? We've got to have these kind of inequalities. There will always be the poor. Some kids are going to get fat and die early. It's because their parents aren't bringing them up very well, and so on. You can get yourself ground down in a kind of depressing way of thinking. And it's about how things are framed and how they're presented to you. It's going to show you a map. We're zooming out of a map now. This is a map of the UK. But this map has been stretched so that every person in the UK gets the same amount of space. And in a way, this is how the UK looks like from the point of view of people. You are in the middle of the densest part of the UK at the moment. Okay? From the point of view of people, the UK looks incredibly crowded. If you're in London and you're at rush hour in London looking at pavements, it looks incredibly crowded, and you can just say there are too many people. How on earth can we have more people? But of course, you're in the parts of the country where there are people. There's lots of the UK, a remarkable amount of the UK, which there are hardly any people at all. We have a population density in London, in the densest parts of London, that's 4 times less than in Barcelona. Barcelona's hardly the kind of city people don't like going to, or living in, for that point of view. I'll just tell you another couple of things about this map. It's called a population chart. Yeah, apologies to Scotland. And again, it's about framing. I've been used to these maps for 25 years. For many of you, I have to remember this. How many of you is this the first time you've seen a map like this? Okay, that's good. You'd have got used to it. Right, to me, this is what a normal map looks like. Right, just like the London Underground map, you know, you're used to that, but it's actually a cartogram. And if we showed you the normal map of the London train system, you wouldn't understand it, it would look a bit weird. This is my normal map. I think of Scotland as Glasgow and Edinburgh, and some other bits that really don't matter very much. Wales is the valleys. This is how things are distributed. If you could see the very thin lines there, they're all the lines of longitude and latitude, and they're curved. But they always meet at right angles on this particular projection. Even though they're curved, at any point they meet at right angles. And these maps used to be popular in the 60s and 70s when they were drawn by hand for medical research. If you had cases of leukemia, you draw a dot where each child who's had leukemia was to try to discover, is there a cluster of leukemia in a particular area? I did this It was dispiriting because there's nothing as random as leukemia. That's what you discover. But that's how else do you discover whether childhood leukemia is incredibly evenly distributed across the population? Or supposing you're interested in whether you've got too many doctors in one area and too few in another. You just draw a dot for each GP. And you might not be surprised to find that GPs tend to like living in nicer areas. GPs don't tend to like living in poor areas where people are iller. But on this kind of map, it becomes obvious very soon. More controversially, if somebody comes along who wants to close down children's heart surgery somewhere, they can come to your office as a young researcher and say, I found your map and I've plotted our major centres of children's heart surgery and I don't think we need Newcastle or Leeds. And so you can use this kind of map for those kind of things as well. But I'm just using it to show you about population distribution and where we are. Let's zoom out. So none of you will have seen this map before. This is the continent you're living in. There are some very nice countries to the north called Scandinavia. They get lots of things right, but they're small. So what this projection does is to stop you concentrating too much on them. Or on Iceland, which practically disappears. Turkey's coming in from the side, and you can see Madrid and Paris and London, especially when somebody is so kind to do that. Hopeful signs, or good signs about the planet or what's going on. We are not at the forefront of good things going on in the world. Maybe the easiest way to describe us, and particularly here, is we're kind of a pirate's nest in the world. A country living off financial industry that basically lives off other people and doesn't contribute very much. And we're very near to it in this part of London. But outside of the UK, really interesting things are going on. In the rest of the world, people are bringing in forms of power and energy which are not going to produce as much carbon as we currently produce. There are various good news stories, not enough, but they're getting better. And there's also an incredible story about population. This map's 10 years old. Even 10 years ago, apart from the most rural, unpopulated part of Turkey, the average couple were having less than 2 children. These rates are actually lower than London was then. I've got to tell you a bit about population projections, because somebody has to worry about population projections. It's remarkable how few people do. They simply accept them and take them for granted. These are the United Nations population projections as of 10 years ago. I'm starting 10 years ago because they've been changed. The central line is what's called a central projection. And they were asked by climate change modellers to go all the way to 2300 because the modellers needed some estimates for their models and they go far, far forward. And so we end by the end of this century with 9.1 billion people because the number of babies has slowed down. A high estimate of 14 billion by the end of the century and a low estimate of 5.5 billion by the end of the century. The sophisticated technique that they use in the United Nations to do the high estimate is they assume that every woman in the world has an extra half a baby. That is what the high estimate is. Plus half a baby. No more sophisticated than that. And the low estimate is take away half a baby. That's why I say it matters. People should look. There's a great tendency to think, I'm only a master's student, I'm whatever. This must be being done by some of the most enormous minds on the planet. They are pretty good people, but there isn't a great sophistication to this. Then, in June 2011, just 2 weeks before In June 2011, they updated the projections by a billion. Okay, just a few years later, there's going to be an extra billion people on the planet. 10.1 by 2100, The low estimate was a bit higher, the high estimate was a bit higher. And they also put in a constant fertility estimate. If we carry on having children at the rate we're having them and don't slow down, what will occur? And they stopped projecting to 2,300. The reason they stopped projecting to 2,300 is that you don't have a bit of paper big enough. Yep, for the new one that they put in. And the reason the middle projection went up by a billion is that a few more women had a few more babies. In 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007. And that was projected forward. And then, really, really annoyingly, for somebody who's publishing a book called Population 10 Billion, in June 2013, 1 week before the book's published, the United Nations decided to increase its estimate to 11 billion. Again, because a few more babies were being born, and mortality was improving. Mortality was going down. The main reason we're going to get to 9, 10 or 11 billion people by the end of the century, the most important reason, is that there's going to be more of us around at any one time because our life expectancies are extending across the world. So it's not more people. In fact, it's some of you, particularly the women in the room. I'm afraid not the men. But some of the women in the room will be projected to live to 2100. Right? So it's not more people. It's people living longer. And if people live longer, you end up with more people at any one time. That's over half the reason. The other part of the reason is the fertility. And the slower it takes to slow down, the more people we have, the faster it slows down, the less people we get. These are children per woman. Historic data from 1950 to now. And then made up data. So the official projections. The important thing to look at is just how fertility fell off a cliff. It's quite incredible what occurred in the 1970s and 1980s everywhere but Africa. And it occurred to an extent in Africa. If it had occurred more in Africa, we'd be talking about 8 billion. Rather than 9, 10 or 11. But just look at the real data and just how remarkable that thing was that happened all over the world. And then look at the projections. And the first thing to ask yourself is, why are they all heading towards 2? Why are the ones that are well below 2 now? Whole of Europe. Hong Kong is about 1.1 children per couple. Tokyo is similar. Barcelona is similar. Shanghai is similar. Italy 1.3. Even the United States, for the first time in its history, has recently gone underneath 2.1 children per couple. So given that so much of the world has gone under 2, why have they ended up projecting to 2 children for every pair of human beings?
It could be,
maybe they might think about enforcing it at some point in the future, having pronatal policies. Some countries do. Scandinavian countries actually encourage people, often in nice ways. What they do, if you were working in Norway and you're male and you didn't take your paternity leave, your colleagues stop talking to you, which is a very effective way of getting men to do that. But no, it's not the reason. They had to come up with something. And they come up with 2 because that's steady state. Have less than 2 and slowly your population is disappearing. Have more than 2 and you're expanding. But this is what I mean about the made up nature of it. Don't just look at these projections and think people really know what they're doing. And play around with them. Why didn't Africa, like all the countries in Africa, see a decrease as fast as the other decrease? On the last slide, I put up what somebody in a talk when I gave these slides originally said about Nestlé and the baby milk. Do you know about Nestlé and the baby milk powder? Yeah. Breastfeeding is, you don't tell people this, but you know this, is slightly contraceptive in the effect of breastfeeding. If you use baby milk, you're slightly more likely to get pregnant. It's not great advice, but it does affect. But more importantly than that, massive economic turmoil and destitution, which you can see in these GDP figures, tends to produce more babies. Babies are a kind of insurance policy. One of the first times we saw fertility come down in the world was when Bismarck introduced pensions in Germany. Introduced pensions, and you need less children to rely on for your old age. Have a good welfare state, and you have fewer children. Have a bad welfare state, think about the United States, and there's a tendency to have more children because you'll need a child to look after you because your pension won't. If you have more economic turmoil, if you have war, if you have disasters, people have babies. So one reason why infant mortality coming down really fast recently is really good news is the faster infant mortality decreases, the fewer children people have. The population sceptics get it completely wrong. There are some extremely nasty people who get upset when infant mortality falls because they think we need people to die in their first year of life so there'll be few of us. These people actually exist, I've talked to them, and apart from the fact their views are very nasty, the stupidity is they don't realise that people have fewer babies when their babies are more likely to survive. Now, nobody quite knows why we had that massive reduction just a few years ago. It was probably tipped over by Bill and Melinda Gates' money. It seems quite remarkable that one extremely rich American can have that effect. But Bill essentially, the word I'm thinking of is bribes, I should come up with a better one, but bribes people to vaccinate babies, which is an incredible way of stopping babies dying in the first year of life. What Bill can't do is create health systems. A philanthropist can't create you a health system, but they can get people to vaccinate every infant they can find for money. And that has an effect. Here's a global picture for population change from 1850 to now. And this is the percentage increase each year. Until around about 1850, we had very slow population rise. Everything changes around about 1850. You're heading up towards the population going up 1% a year, and then 2% a year. There are a few, just four, it's slightly like the horsemen of the apocalypse. There are four exceptions to this, but in general you have this almighty rise. So that by 1968, a couple can produce a book called The Population Bomb and say, we're all going to starve, it's just going to come to an end. If this carries on any further, we've had it. And that was the normal rhetoric of the 1960s and early 1970s. And they had a point. There was an American demographer, an American mathematician at the time, who looked at that compound rate of growth, 2.1, 2.2%, around about 1970, and who worked out, and you could just do this on a calculator yourselves, that if that continued for 300 years, then the entire planet would be a seething mass of bodies with every human being touching other human beings. Right? That's what you get with compound growth of 2% a year. Now, the reason he produced those estimates, I think, was to try to point out to people that this cannot continue and it's not going to continue and it's very weird. And as you can see from 1971 onwards, we've had this deceleration. Incredible deceleration. 40-odd years now of deceleration. And that's what we're banking on for the population steadying out at 9, 10 or 11 billion. The little jump in there is the East African famine. One way to think about this, because my way of thinking about this, it's not many other people's, so the chances of me being right are extremely low. But the way I look at this is, let's step back and say what we've seen since 1850, a little bit earlier, and what we're in the middle of now is a transformation. It's a population explosion, 1 billion to 10 billion in just six generations. It's a transformation from most people living in villages to most people living in cities, and we're part of the way through it, and we have no way of knowing how it's going to end. It's very weird. The last time we had a population explosion globally on this scale, that is a 6, 7, 8-fold increase in human beings, was when we stopped hunter-gathering and we started settling villages. And that was a very long time ago. That's the last time we've had it. And if you step back and look at it like that, then you don't talk about how we're living now as a social system or as a way of being. It's a transformation. And transformations are confusing and they're unsustainable. The reason I put up this particular map is that I really like this city in what is now Turkey, and it just gives you an example of how things aren't necessarily obvious which you think are obvious. About 10,000 years old, this city, one of the first cities in the world, and if you look carefully you'll notice something very odd about it. It hasn't got any streets, because streets were an invention. You climbed up and you climbed over other people's roofs to get out. And so it took us time to invent streets. You may kind of think, although they're not that clever. If any of you read a book well worth reading, if you're interested in what you're doing, called The Condition of the Working Class, written by Engels, again, around about 1850, a little bit earlier. Engels talks about streets in Manchester. And the great invention in Manchester that they needed that they didn't have, which is rather than dig down and build basements that you can put itinerant labourers in, which is what they were doing then, because they had a population explosion coming in to work the mills, and then they found the sewage ran through their bedrooms. Rather than do that, you can put in sewers. And that was only 150 years ago. So this is what I mean by a transformation. We're still learning how to do things. I think you've only got to look at London to see this. London was the largest city on the planet 100 years ago. It's the 25th largest city now. And a lot of it just doesn't work. Think how much rent you're paying. Think how much rent you'll be paying if you stay here for another 5 or 10 years. Think how we're getting people around the city. What are the Boris bikes actually doing? I mean, they're better than when we didn't have them. But who's actually on the Boris bikes? And why does a van have to come and take them all back at night and put them in the right places? Why aren't the pavements wide enough for people? So we're still learning. This is an old graph, 2012 graph. It's just about what's going to happen to the debt if we don't have immigration. And it was produced by OBR. And again, it's about learning. Britain's a really interesting country economically. We have a massive debt. So what do we do if we're clever? We tell people, please come here, especially those of you who are young and skilled and going to work hard, because you can share some of our debt with us. And if enough of you come here, we can get it down. And we don't actually do that, but it's a sensible thing to do. Another graph, just to try to help you if you're feeling pessimistic about the way the world's going. We've passed peak oil in much of the oil some time ago. Doesn't mean we're not going to be really stupid and burn all the rest as fast as we can and have that 6 degree Celsius rise and all our grandchildren will die, but it's not inevitable. Have any of you seen Hans Rosling do videos on Gapminder? Is it called? I should have bought you a video. Just type in quietly to your electronic device now, just Hans, H-A-N-S, Rosling, R-O-S-L-I-N-G. Hans Rosling was a very successful doctor who got bored with spending his life with sick people by middle age. Had a son who was very good at computer graphics and has created the most successful website in the world to look at changes and differences in population. Let's not... Oh, no, I'll tell you just one story. I've kind of simplified a lot at the moment. And I'm giving you a very simple story, but things are always complicated. And it's just worth looking at the exceptions. The country with the lowest infant mortality rate in the world at the moment is Singapore. Singapore does have a very good health system, does have very good hospitals. But the interesting thing is that Singapore doesn't celebrate having the lowest infant mortality rate in the world. And so when you see that, you need to look and ask, why doesn't it? And the reason, to put it very simply, is there are about 100,000 maids, that's servants in Singapore. There used to be pregnancy tests every 6 months. They're now pregnancy tests every 3 months. If you have your child in Singapore, your employee has to pay the costs, which is many, many times how much they're paying you to be a servant. And this is one way of bringing down infant mortality. You don't let people have children. It's that kind of draconian thing you were talking about. The reason to raise it is that people are beginning to talk about doing that here. So that is letting people into the country, but not letting them have children in the country. This is a map about problems with food. There are about 42 things that you can worry about if you're worrying about everything that could go wrong in the world, including things like nuclear winter and so on. It's a very depressing list. I've put the list in the book, but some things can be put lower down and some things higher up. The wonderful thing about food is that if you eat too much of it, you get very, very ill. Now, if you imagine that you could just eat as much food as you liked and it tasted great and you didn't get fat, we'd have a much bigger problem with food than we have at the moment. Imagine that if eating lots of red meat was really good for you, we'd have a worse problem with food. Water's a bigger problem with food, soil's a bigger problem with water than water, climate's a bigger problem, and we've forgotten about war. And you can worry about rare earths as well if you want to worry about things. We need various rare elements to have catalytic converters in cars. But it's worth thinking, in 50 or 100 years' time, will we need as many cars? Occasionally you get blips. There's this general relationship between people live longer, get healthier, they have fewer babies. But if you look at the UK and the USA and Russia, you'll see for a very short amount of time quite recently they went in a slightly different direction. Don't get confused by the blips, they tend to be blips. Look at the overall pattern of things. These are the fertility rates in Iran. It's amazing how many people do not know that across almost all the planet, for decades, we've had below fertility replacement in some of the poorest parts of the world. And they partly don't know about it because it hasn't happened because the Rockefeller Institution has gone out spreading condoms by parachute or whatever else. You know, it isn't some kind of great macho achievement. What's happened, as far as we can tell, is that billions of largely not particularly well-educated but slightly educated women have told the men they are with that they want to have one less child than the man thinks is a good idea. And that's happened to them, and it didn't happen to their mothers. And that seems to be the best explanation about what's happened in the last 40 years. Have any of you read Jared Diamond's book, Collapse? No? Okay. Jared Diamond, I think in the middle of Collapse, has a story about Easter Island and it's a story about how terrible human beings are, and they can't look after themselves and organise themselves very well. So they cut all the trees down on Easter Island, and when we turned up on Easter Island, we found these giant statues, a kind of story about a old civilization, but essentially people are greedy, selfish, can't plan, and destroy their environment. And there's a kind of common story about this. Now, we're quite capable of doing it, but the usual story is the opposite of Easter Island. That's why people are still around. And in fact, Easter Island is looking more and more as if Peruvian slavers actually wrecked it shortly before the document has turned up. This little island is called Tikopia in the Pacific. It's much smaller than Easter Island, and it's had a human population on it for 4,000 years. It's quite incredible. Very little resources. Human beings have managed to survive for 4,000 years on Tikopia. In fairly brutal ways in some cases. If there were too many people, the young men would get in canoes and go looking for another island. There weren't any other islands nearby. If things got even worse, they put the babies out on slabs of rock and left them to die. They practiced infanticide. But the population was stable for 4,000 years. There's no more infanticide on Tikopia, because there are condoms and there's a pill and so on. But the bad news for Tikopia is that the sea level's risen, so the seawater's coming over into the lake in the middle, which could be the end of Tikopia. Reasons to be cheerful if you're not on a very low-lying, very tiny Pacific island. The way we're changing what happens to people, who gets to be educated to what level, who gets access to things like an internet, which didn't exist when I was a child, who gets to be literate, who gets to go to university, the fact that the majority of the faces that I'm looking at are female, are all quite amazing things in the context of just 50 and 100 years of change. I'm going to end just trying to look at what is the likely thing to happen. Is it going to be 9? Is it going to be 10? Is it going to be 11? And I did something really simple at the end of this book. What I did is take the UN estimates of the number of people on the planet each year and the projections all the way to 2100. I took 1 year away from the next year to get the change, and then I took the change away from the change. So I'm looking at the acceleration or deceleration. And so this gets measured in millions. And what you get is this pattern. It's all a bit jaggedy, and then you get kind of very steady thing. But they say there'll be deceleration, then it'll go to a steady state. And I just noticed something odd about the jaggedy bit at the front, because we had acceleration, deceleration, that little bit of acceleration just above my hand here, that little hump is entirely responsible for going from 9 to 10 to 11 billion, a few more babies there. And what I noticed about those little humps is that the gap between the first two is 18 years and the gap between the next two is 21 years. And this isn't elephants, or fruit flies, or tortoises, or guinea pigs. It's people. And what do people do every 18 years and now every 21 years? Or every 30 years in Europe? They have babies. These are the lengths of human generations. And what you may be looking at, and what will become very obvious in the next 10 years, is that we may have had worldwide baby booms. And what's happened a few years before the financial crash was the echo of one of the last of those baby booms. Now, we know we had a baby boom in this country 9 months after 1945. Okay. We even had a bigger one after 1919. And then another baby boom in 1965. and then a smaller baby boom in the 1980s, and then we've had little one recently, and we haven't been able to build enough primary schools for kids because we can't see it coming 4 years. And that wartime baby boom occurred across the United States, and it occurred across the whole of Europe, but it looks as if it might also have occurred across India with independence, and occurred across China at a similar time with the revolution. The reason we have to guess is because nobody was counting in India and China at those times. But if this is the case, if it isn't just Europe and North America which had these baby booms, if they were more worldwide, then we can begin to look at something like this and say, what happens if that's the case, rather than the projections that are being made? And you can make it slightly more sophisticated, but it isn't any more sophisticated. All of this is guesswork. And you get 7.4 billion people, rather than 8 or 9 or 10. By the time that you are dying in your old age, and the time that you are reliant on younger people, so people to stick catheters in you. And it's fairly important. It matters whether we have 7 billion, 8 billion, 9 billion, 10 billion, or 11 billion people. In many ways, it is easier organising things if we do have 7 or 8 or 9 billion, rather than 10 or 11 billion. And if you get 7 or 8 or 9 billion people when women are given a bit more respect and a bit more power, and when there's more stability in the world, and when there are fewer wars, and when people can look forward to their old age without worrying about what's going to happen, then it could be in our collective interests to say, what is it that we could do to promote a world in which people slow down just a little bit more? And can we start looking at Asian cities and parts of Europe and actually say, those parts of the world where it's become normal to have one child and not two, is that likely to spread? Rather than thinking that two is the default and two is normal. Almost at the end, I've just got some maps to finish, then please ask me some questions. That little hump with the question mark, again, is the all-important recent data. It's going to become very hard right now to work out what's happening because, in a way, I've been proved right in the book very, very fast because we've had an almighty drop in births. And I was saying these are baby booms, the births will drop. Unfortunately for me, this almighty drop in births has coincided with the biggest economic crash since 1929. And huge economic crashes immediately tend to bring down births. People put off having children in the immediate years of a crash. So we can't tell straight away. I'm going to skip this one. It's all about capitalism. And then with these. Now, if you remember at the very beginning, I told you that I'm used to these maps, but you haven't seen these maps before. This is a map of the world, but again, it's a population cartogram. So we've taken every small square of land, and we've made it bigger if there are people on it, so its area is in proportion to the number of people, and we try and make it disappear if there are no people. So, where's this? Sahara Desert, okay? So the Sahara Desert disappears. And this really scary, enormous thing coming in from the side, that's India. And you can get scared about it. What we've done is colour it in by a very famous satellite image, composite satellite image called the Earth at Night. And you'll have all seen the Earth at Night. There's Moscow up in the corner. And people have told you the Earth at Night picture is where people are. That was a lie. The Earth at Night picture was a picture of where people lived who had so much electricity that they could afford to shine it up into the sky. Whereas this is actually a map of where people are. So here's India, here's China, here are all the countries of Africa. Similar populations, just over a billion in all cases. And when I look at this map, it stops me being frightened. I actually look at this map, I've got a giant version of it on my wall, and I can see streets in Tokyo that I've been to on a world map. It's only 7 or 8 billion people. It just feels smaller. The map was only created, I think, about 2004, this particular one, because of the detail of it. Created by a physicist called Mark Newman. And just for an aside on Mark, he's a very clever physicist. He's the grandson of Max Newman. And Max, if any of you have seen the film about Turing recently, Max was Turing's PhD supervisor, who, among other things, invented computers. So this image, detailed image created in 2004, and it's showing you a planet full of people, many of whom are not wasting electricity, either because they don't have very much electricity where it's dark, or because where they live there, they're more careful to shine it down, not to shine it up into the sky. But the last image I'm going to show you is this updated, because if you look here, you'll see that the brightest spot on Earth is Tokyo. If you know Tokyo and you know all the neon lights, you can see why Tokyo is the brightest spot on Earth. It's 30 million people, largest city on the planet. And the danger is if everybody behaved like they behave in Tokyo, you end up with a kind of shining planet burning up its coal and oil so that it can sort of go out in a blaze of light. And here's the most recent picture. And you'll see that Tokyo has become more dim. Tokyo has become dimmer because they turned all the nuclear power stations off when the tsunami hit. It's a quarter of their electricity, which meant they had to turn some lights off as well, but life continued otherwise. And Cairo is now brighter than Tokyo. But that is the kind of planet you're looking at. That is where everybody is. This is how they're using up resources. These people have never been healthier. There are all kinds of problems, but we've never had this situation in which the children of all these people have been so likely to survive. If you went back just 100 years in this city, and if you know the Charles Booth maps of the city, the ones which are coloured yellow and red and so on, and black for the criminal classes, in the yellow areas, the poshest servant-keeping areas in this city 100 years ago, 1 in 10 of the infants died before their first birthday. So we've gone from that to what we have now. We're going through it worldwide. All we've got to do is work out how we make our cities work. But it took us a long time to work out we needed streets rather than walking over roofs. And it took us another 10,000 years to work out that sewers were a good idea. So we're going to have to think a bit faster and cleverer than that. But I don't think we need to be scared about each other. I do think there's lots of reason to be optimistic. And please do ask me questions, I think, for about 5 minutes before you get a break. Thank you very much. No, I mean, two is actually a decrease because there are two of you. Yeah. You have two. Occasionally they die before they can reproduce. Yeah. So 2.1, or actually it's good news. Nowadays people say 2.05 is a steady case. So it's like Adam and Eve producing Adam and Eve. And so it's very boringly heterosexual, this, but, you know, it's all like that.
But doesn't Adam and Eve one sort of live enough to see Adam and Eve fall at the same time, falls up behind the earth?
No, this is two children in your entire lifetime. Yep. So They have two, they have two, they have two. There's a little bit of incest going on, I'm afraid, the simple model. But honestly, two steady state. But the remarkable thing is that one is what's looking like becoming more and more normal. One in four of you will not have children. That's where you look slightly. About one in four, the way things are currently going. Half of those one in four would have chosen not to have children. The other half of the one in four will discover that they can't have children, partly because you're going to wait so long. And this is partly because the best form of contraceptive on the planet is a university education.
What role do you think Hollywood and market culture to other countries has, what effect do you think that has on this group? Is that a substantial
cost? It could do, Hollywood or American culture.
But yeah, spreading to other countries and informing cultural norms around how many children you would have.
Yeah, or what success is. A friend of mine once claimed there are only four countries on the planet which haven't been Americanized, of which the biggest is Japan, interestingly, even though it was invaded and has baseball. It's a really interesting question. Mainland Europe spends about 1% of its GDP on advertising. We spend 2% and we buy lots more crap. So we buy and throw away far more stuff than normal Europeans do. Americans spend 4% on advertising and have an even more unsustainable culture. But I don't think a message is being put out there too much saying a big family is a successful family. Occasionally you get little studies suggesting that the rich in America have begun to have three or four children. So far these have all been unsubstantiated. You know, that Brad and Jolene or Russell Brand, when he finally settles down with somebody, or, you know, they're not having those three or four kid families anymore. If they began to, and it began to seem as a measure of success, then things could get problematic. There are best-selling books in America that are concerned with the fertility of the middle class in America being very low. So the middle class is shrinking fastest in the States. And 100 years ago, William Beveridge, you know, the bloke who did The Welfare State, he wrote a book about women, which is a really funny book because he wasn't particularly informed, having gone to rugby all boys' school. And he said the duty of women, particularly women from his social class and his race, was to have four children for the race. That was what you should do. Our queen had four children for the race. Not necessarily all with the same father. Can you guess which one? But that was normal. Generation later, Diana has two. Incredible, two is normal. How many will... What's her name? Catherine? How many do you predict Catherine's going to have? Three. You think three? Let's see. Is only one so far? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's one a second. It's called The Heir and the Spare. Have we got one more question? More serious ones, stop me being rude about the royal family. Oh, by the way, the royal family, Blinder, his job. He's going to be landing in a helicopter, picking people off motorways who are dying and saving their lives. Right? That's what his job is now. They're sorted. This is going to be the most popular royal family on the planet.
Can you just ask about populations in London? I was just thinking, the Bengali community tends to have quite a high fertility rate, and if you love going to northeast London and look at the Hasidic Jewish community, yeah. And they have so many children. Does this kind of map out? Has anyone ever mapped that out in London in terms of? Yeah. And does that tend to change very quickly in generations?
London's managed to get up to 1.9, which is remarkably high. That's what I mean by the small blip. Nowhere in Europe ever gets up to 2. London's now one of the highest. It is quite remarkable people are managing to do this in London, given how overcrowded it is. That Jewish community stand out like a complete sore thumb in the census. And they weren't like it 10 years ago either, but it's only a particular part in a particular area with a high number. They should explode. Their children will rebel and won't do the same thing. The same as so you see this thing occasionally happening to one generation of people, but you never manage to sustain that for very, very long. But in general, all the immigrant groups that have come to London, and London is an immigrant city, it only exists because of immigrants, each one has rapidly reduced the number of children it has to halfway between what their parents' children fertility was and London average. And then another generation it is at London average or below. And that's what tends to happen in London. But it is remarkable that people are managing to squeeze children into London at the moment. Do you want the last one, or should we let you go for a break? Anybody want to disagree with me for fun? You're two chilled. Okay, thank you very much.